The Fellowship of the Ring, Cassette 4.
Before long the wood came to a sudden end. Wide grassland stretched before them. They now saw that they had, in fact, turned too much to the south. Away over the flats they could glimpse the low hill of Bucklebury across the river, but it was now to their left. Creeping cautiously out from the edge of the trees, they set off across the open as quickly as they could. At first they felt afraid, away from the shelter of the wood. Far back behind them stood the high place where they had breakfasted. Frodo half expected to see the small, distant figure of a horseman on the ridge dark against the sky, but there was no sign of one. The sun, escaping from the breaking clouds as it sank towards the hills they had left, was now shining brightly again. Their fear left them, though they still felt uneasy. But the land became steadily more tame and well-ordered. Soon they came into well-tended fields and meadows. There were hedges and gates and dikes for drainage. Everything seemed quiet and peaceful, just an ordinary corner of the Shire. Their spirits rose with every step. The line of the river grew nearer, and the black riders began to seem like phantoms of the woods now left far behind. They passed along the edge of a huge turnip field, and came to a stout gate. Beyond it a rutted lane ran between low, well-laid hedges towards a distant clump of trees. Pippin stopped.
"I know these fields and this gate," he said. "This is Bamfurlong, old Farmer Maggot's land. That's his farm, away there in the trees."
"One trouble after another," said Frodo, looking nearly as much alarmed as if Pippin had declared the lane was the slot leading to a dragon's den. The others looked at him in surprise.
"What's wrong with old Maggot?" asked Pippin. "He's a good friend to all the Brandybucks. Of course he's a terror to trespassers, and keeps ferocious dogs, but after all, folk down here and near the border and have to be more on their guard."
"I know," said Frodo, "but all the same," he added with a shamefaced laugh, "I'm terrified of him and his dogs. I've avoided his farm for years and years. He caught me several times trespassing after mushrooms when I was a youngster at Brandy Hall. On the last occasion he beat me, and then took me and showed me to his dogs. See, lads," he said, "next time this young varmint sets foot on my land you can eat him. Now see him off." They chased me all the way to the ferry. I've never got over the fright, though I dare say the beasts knew their business and wouldn't really have touched me. Pippin laughed.
"Well, it's time you made it up, especially if you're coming back to live in Buckland. Old Maggot is really a stout fellow, if you leave his mushrooms alone. Let's get into the lane, and then we shan't be trespassing. If we meet him, I'll do the talking. He's a friend of Merry's, and I used to come here with him a good deal at one time."
They went along the lane until they saw the thatched roofs of a large house and farm buildings peeping out among the trees ahead. The Maggots and the Puddyfoots of stock and most of the inhabitants of the Marish were house-dwellers, and his farm was stoutly built of brick and had a high wall all around it. There was a wide wooden gate opening out of the wall into the lane. Suddenly, as they drew nearer, a terrific baying and barking broke out, and a loud voice was heard shouting,
"Grip! Fang! Wolf! Come on, lads!"
Frodo and Sam stopped dead, but Pippin walked on a few paces. The gate opened, and three huge dogs came pelting out into the lane and dashed towards the travellers, barking fiercely. They took no notice of Pippin, but Sam shrank against the wall, while two wolvish-looking dogs sniffed at him suspiciously and snarled if he moved. The largest and most ferocious of the three halted in front of Frodo, bristling and growling. Through the gate there now appeared a broad, thick-set hobbit with a round red face.
"Hallo, hallo, and who may you be, and what may you be wanting?" he asked.
"Good afternoon, Mr. Maggot," said Pippin.
The farmer looked at him closely.
"Well, if it isn't Master Pippin, Mr. Peregrine Took, I should say," he cried, changing from a scowl to a grin. "It's a long time since I saw you round here. It's lucky for you that I know you. I was just going out to set my dogs on any strangers. There are some funny things going on today. Of course, we do get queer folk wandering in these parts at times, too near the river," he said, shaking his head. "But this fellow was the most outlandish I've ever set eyes on. He won't cross my land without leave a second time, not if I can stop him."
"What fellow do you mean?" asked Pippin.
"Then you haven't seen him?" said the farmer. "He went up the lane toward the causeway not a long while back. He was a funny customer and asking funny questions. But perhaps you'll come along inside and we'll pass the news more comfortable. I've a drop of good ale on tap, if you and your friends are willing, Mr. Took."
It seemed plain that the farmer would tell them more if allowed to do it in his own time and fashion, so they all accepted the invitation.
"What about the dogs?" asked Frodo anxiously.
The farmer laughed. "They won't harm you, not unless I tell them to. Here, Grip. Fang, heel!" he cried. "Heel, Wolf!"
To the relief of Frodo and Sam, the dogs walked away and let them go free. Pippin introduced the other two to the farmer.
"Mr. Frodo Baggins," he said. "You may not remember him, but he used to live at Brandy Hall."
At the name Baggins, the farmer started and gave Frodo a sharp glance. For a moment, Frodo thought that the memory of stolen mushrooms had been aroused, and that the dogs would be told to see him off. But Farmer Maggot took him by the arm.
"Well, if that isn't queerer than ever," he exclaimed. "Mr. Baggins, is it? Come inside. We must have a talk."
They went into the farmer's kitchen and sat by the wide fireplace. Mrs. Maggot brought out beer in a huge jug and filled four large mugs. It was a good brew, and Pippin found himself more than compensated for missing the golden perch. Sam sipped his beer suspiciously. He had a natural mistrust of the inhabitants of other parts of the shire, and also he was not disposed to be quick friends with anyone who had beaten his master, however long ago. After a few remarks about the weather and the agricultural prospects, which were no worse than usual, Farmer Maggot put down his mug and looked at them all in turn.
"Now, Mr. Peregrine," he said, "where might you be coming from, and where might you be going to? Were you coming to visit me? For if so, you'd gone past my gate without my seeing you."
"Well, no," answered Pippin. "To tell you the truth, since you've guessed it, we got into the lane from the other end. We'd come over your fields, but that was quite by accident. We lost our way in the woods, back near Woodhall, trying to take a short cut to the ferry."
"If you were in a hurry, the road would have served you better," said the farmer. "But I wasn't worrying about that. You have leave to walk over my land, if you have a mind, Mr. Peregrine. And you, Mr. Baggins, though I dare say you still like mushrooms." He laughed. "Ah, yes, I recognise the name. I recollect the time when young Frodo Baggins was one of the worst young rascals of Buckland. But it wasn't mushrooms I was thinking of. I had just heard the name Baggins before you turned up. What do you think that funny customer asked me?"
They waited anxiously for him to go on.
"Well," the farmer continued, approaching his point with slow relish, "he came riding on a big black horse in at the gate, which happened to be open, and ride up to my door. All black he was himself, too, and cloaked and hooded up, as if he didn't want to be known. Now, what in the shire can he want?" I thought to myself. "We don't see many of the big folk over the border, and anyway, I'd never heard of any like this black fellow. Good day to you," I says, going out to him. "This lane don't lead anywhere, and wherever you may be going, your quickest way will be back to the road." I didn't like the looks of him, and when Grip came out, he took one sniff and let out a yelp as if he'd been stung. He put down his tail and bolted off howling. The black fellow sat quite still. "I come from yonder," he said, slow and stiff-like, pointing back west over my fields, if you please. "Have you seen Baggins?" he asked in a queer voice, and bent low towards me. I couldn't see any face, for his hood fell down so low, and I felt a sort of shiver down my back. But I didn't see why he should come riding over my land so bold. "Be off," I said. "There are no Bagginses here. You're in the wrong part of the shire. You'd better go back west to Hobbiton, but you can go by road this time."
"Baggins has left," he answered in a whisper. "He's coming. He's not far away. I wish to find him. If he passes, will you tell me? I will come back with gold."
"No, you won't," I said. "You'll go back where you belong. Double quick. I give you 1 minute before I call all my dogs."
He gave a sort of hiss. It might have been laughing, and it might not. Then he spurred his great horse right at me, and I jumped out of the way only just in time. I called the dogs, but he swung off and rode through the gate and up the lane toward the causeway like a bolt of thunder. What do you think of that?
Frodo sat for a moment looking at the fire, but his only thought was how on earth would they reach the ferry. "I don't know what to think," he said at last.
"Then I'll tell you what to think," said Maggot. "You should never have gone mixing up yourself with Hobbiton folk, Mr. Frodo. Folk are queer up there."
Sam stirred in his chair and looked at the farmer with an unfriendly eye.
"But you were always a reckless lad. When I heard you had left the brandy bucks and gone off to that old Mr. Bilbo, I said that you were going to find trouble. Mark my words, this all comes of those strange doings of Mr. Bilbo's. His money was got in some strange fashion in foreign parts, they say. Maybe there's some that want to know what has become of the gold and jewels that he buried in the hill of Hobbiton, as I hear."
Frodo said nothing. The shrewd guesses of the farmer were rather disconcerting.
"Well, Mr. Frodo," Maggot went on, "I'm glad that you've had the sense to come back to Buckland. My advice is stay here, and don't get mixed up with those outlandish folk. You'll have friends in these parts. If any of these black fellows come after you again, I'll deal with them. I'll say you're dead, or have left the shire, or anything you like. And that might be true enough, for as like as not, it's old Mr. Bilbo they want news of."
"Maybe you're right," said Frodo, avoiding the farmer's eye and staring at the fire. Maggot looked at him thoughtfully.
"Well, I see you have ideas of your own," he said. "It's as plain as my nose that no accident brought you and that rider here on the same afternoon, and maybe my news was no great news to you after all. I'm not asking you to tell me anything you have a mind to keep to yourself, but I see you're in some kind of trouble. Perhaps you're thinking it won't be too easy to get to the ferry without being caught."
"I was thinking so," said Frodo. "But we've got to try and get there, and it won't be done by sitting and thinking. So I'm afraid we must be going. Thank you very much indeed for your kindness. I've been in terror of you and your dogs for over 30 years, Farmer Maggot, though you may laugh to hear it. It's a pity, for I've missed a good friend, and now I'm sorry to leave so soon. But I'll come back, perhaps, one day, if I get a chance."
"You'll be welcome when you come," said Maggot. "But now I've a notion. It's near sundown already, and we're going to have our supper, for we mostly go to bed soon after the sun. If you and Mr. Peregrine and all could stay and have a bite with us, we would be pleased."
"And so should we," said Frodo. "But we must be going at once, I'm afraid. Even now it will be dark before we can reach the ferry."
"Ah, but wait a minute. I was going to say, after a bit of supper, I'll get out a small wagon and I'll drive you all to the ferry. That will save you a good step, and it might also save you trouble of another sort."
Frodo now accepted the invitation gratefully, to the relief of Pippin and Sam. The sun was already behind the western hills, and the light was failing. Two of Maggot's sons and his three daughters came in, and a generous supper was laid on the large table. The kitchen was lit with candles, and the fire was mended. Mrs. Maggot bustled in and out. One or two other hobbits belonging to the farm household came in. In a short while, 14 sat down to eat. There was beer in plenty, and a mighty dish of mushrooms and bacon, besides much other solid farmhouse fare. The dogs lay by the fire and gnawed rinds and cracked bones. When they'd finished, the farmer and his sons went out with a lantern and got the wagon ready. It was dark in the yard when the guests came out. They threw their packs on board and climbed in. The farmer sat in the driving seat and whipped up his two stout ponies. His wife stood in the light of the open door.
"You be careful of yourself, Maggot," she called. "Don't go arguing with any foreigners, and come straight back."
"I will," said he, and drove out of the gate. There was now no breath of wind stirring. The night was still and quiet, and a chill was in the air. They went without lights and took it slowly. After a mile or two the lane came to an end, crossing a deep dike and climbing a short slope up onto the high-banked causeway. Maggot got down and took a good look either way, north and south, but nothing could be seen in the darkness, and there was not a sound in the still air. Thin strands of river mist were hanging above the dikes and crawling over the fields.
"It's going to be thick," said Maggot. "But I'll not light my lanterns till I turn for home. We'll hear anything on the road long before we meet it tonight."
It was 5 miles or more from Maggot's Lane to the ferry. The hobbits wrapped themselves up, but their ears were strained for any sound above the creak of the wheels and the slow clop of the ponies' hoofs. The wagon seemed slower than a snail to Frodo. Beside him Pippin was nodding toward sleep, but Sam was staring forwards into the rising fog. They reached the entrance to the ferry lane at last. It was marked by two tall white posts that suddenly loomed up on their right. Farmer Maggot drew in his ponies, and the wagon creaked to a halt. They were just beginning to scramble out when suddenly they heard what they had all been dreading. Hoofs on the road ahead. The sound was coming towards them. Maggot jumped down and stood holding the ponies' heads and peering forward into the gloom. Clip-clop, clip-clop came the approaching rider. The fall of the hooves sounded loud in the still, foggy air.
"You'd better be hidden, Mr. Frodo," said Sam anxiously. "You get down in the wagon and cover up with blankets, and we'll send this rider to the rightabouts."
He climbed out and went to the farmer's side. Black riders would have to ride over him to get near the wagon. Clip-clop, clip-clop, the rider was nearly on them.
"Hello there!" cried Farmer Maggot.
The advancing hooves stopped short. They thought they could dimly guess a dark, cloaked shape in the mist, a yard or two ahead.
"Now then," said the farmer, throwing the reins to Sam and striding forward. "Don't you come a step nearer. What do you want, and where are you going?"
"I want Mr. Baggins. Have you seen him?"
said a muffled voice. But the voice was the voice of Merry Brandybuck. A dark lantern was uncovered, and its light fell on the astonished face of the farmer.
"Mr. Merry!" he cried.
"Yes, of course. Who did you think it was?"
said Merry, coming forward. As he came out of the mist and their fears subsided, he seemed suddenly to diminish to ordinary hobbit size. He was riding a pony, and a scarf was swathed round his neck and over his chin to keep out the fog. Frodo sprang out of the wagon to greet him.
"So there you are at last," said Merry. "I was beginning to wonder if you'd turn up at all today, and I was just going back to supper. When it grew foggy I came across and rode up towards Stock to see if you'd fallen in any ditches. But I'm blessed if I know which way you've come. Where did you find them, Mr. Maggot? In your duck pond?"
"No, I caught them trespassing," said the farmer, "and nearly set my dogs on 'em. But they'll tell you all the story, I've no doubt. Now, if you'll excuse me, Mr. Merry and Mr. Frodo and all, I'd best be turning for home. Mrs. Maggot will be worriting with the night getting thick. He backed the wagon into the lane and turned it. Well, good night to you all, he said. It's been a queer day, and no mistake. But all's well as ends well, though perhaps we should not say that until we reach our own doors. I'll not deny that I'll be glad now when I do. He lit his lanterns and got up. Suddenly he produced a large basket from under the seat. I was nearly forgetting, he said. Mrs. Maggot put this up for Mr. Baggins with her compliments. He handed it down and moved off, followed by a chorus of thanks and good nights. They watched the pale rings of light round his lanterns as they dwindled into the foggy night. Suddenly Frodo laughed. From the covered basket he held, the scent of mushrooms was rising. Chapter 5 A Conspiracy Unmasked. Now we'd better get home ourselves, said Merry. There's something funny about all this, I see, but it must wait till we get in. They turned down the ferry lane.